In recent years, we've experienced a record amount of flooding, variability in rainfall that's cost the state billions. This hour, coping with our extreme weather future. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we look at how climate change is shaping extreme weather patterns in the Midwest. Also, we'll look at the economic impact and how we in Iowa can best prepare for the years to come. My guests include Chris Anderson of the Climate Science Program at Iowa State University, ISU economist Dave Swenson, Nick Gerhardt, Insurance Commissioner of the State of Iowa, Larry Weber of the Iowa Flood Center, and Des Moines Mayor Frank County. What are your questions about the impact of climate change? We start right after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Over the past few years, Iowa has been experiencing swings from one weather extreme to another, fluctuations that are expensive, and they're negatively affecting Iowa overall in areas such as agriculture, business, and just our daily lives. The economic impact of these weather extremes and how to make Iowa more resilient to weather extremes is the topic of a day-long symposium this Wednesday at Hy-Vee Hall in Des Moines. Leading state policymakers, scientists, researchers, including some on today's show, will be participating. And you can find out more at ppc.uiowa.edu. And this hour, we'll be hearing, as I said, from a number of participants taking part in the museum symposium. But we want to hear from you as well. What questions do you have about our extreme weather future? Has your life or livelihood been affected by the weather within the last 5 years, the floods, the extreme dryness, the drought? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. And perhaps more importantly, how are you, if you are, preparing for more extreme weather in our future? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. My first guest is Chris Anderson, Assistant Director of the Climate Science Program at Iowa State University. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Can we start off by just reminding us, please recap the damaging conditions we've seen over the past five years?
Well, there are a few statistics we can look at in the public sector. There are statistics on tornadoes, wind, hail, flood, and even agricultural production. And in those statistics, what they show is in Iowa, the change in the early part of the millennium from 2000 and 2004 to the most recent 5 years has been, and losses estimated in those public documents, from $10.5 million to $138 million. And then the flood losses, of course, have been much larger. It's gone from about $1.4 billion to about $2.9 billion. And so these public losses are just direct losses. They don't include a lot of the side losses or the impacts on business or disaster assistance that comes in to recuperate from the loss. Mm-hmm. The other area in agriculture where we've seen indemnities increase a great deal from 2004 to 2008 and 12. These indemnities for corn have increased from $269 million to $2.2 billion, and for soybean yield from $391 million to $608 million. So there are lots of different facets in Iowa that have been quantified in public records. There are also lots of other facets that are not so easy to quantify, things that relate to water quality and wildlife populations and quality of life.
Now, the statistics, the data that you just referenced there is quite dramatic when you talk about the increase in damage. But weather patterns shift over decades, over centuries, and sometimes you can have periods of extreme weather. How do we know this is part of some new era, the beginning of a new era in extreme weather?
Yeah, well, that's right. That's a good observation. And there are really only a couple parts of this that we can really point to as a new shift. Tornadoes, for example, we would not necessarily say anything has changed. And even droughts, the droughts we had in 2012, occurred at a time that was at about the same frequency as they have in the past. And there isn't any scientific evidence to suggest that currently their frequency has changed, or we would expect them to change. So really what has changed is how much rain we get in the spring. That is one of the clearest signals that we've seen in the weather records dating back to 1893. For example, if you look at the annual rainfall in Iowa, then what would be an extremely wet year, you could say prior to 1980 that occurred 1 in 12 times, and since that's been 1 in 3 years. And so that's a very dramatic shift. Now, while tornado damages and drought damages have gone up and not necessarily been a result of a change in shift, but maybe just bad timing and bad luck, there are really physical reasons why we think that the change in the rainfall is going to persist going forward, and why it's really indicating an actual change in the physical environment that isn't going to go away.
Mm-hmm. What are those reasons?
Well, there are two real reasons. One is the way that storms track across the Midwest. And as you said earlier, there are changes in climate that happen on 10-year scales, 30-year scales, 100-year scales. And currently we are under an ocean Pacific sea surface temperature pattern that favors the movement of storms into our region rather than north of our region. And that typically has a period of about 30 years. As far as we can tell, this change occurred somewhere in the 90s, and so we expect this to persist through the 2020s. And what that means is storms will be coming into our area with a regular frequency, and droughts will be less frequent, or maybe more accurately said, they will be smaller in area. Okay. So the second factor that's a longer-term factor is just that the ocean temperatures in the entire globe have warmed. And the primary cause of this is from the increase in the greenhouse gases. What happens with the warmer ocean temperatures is that they then release more water into the air, and then more water into the air gets into the storms and causes them to have more rainfall. And so with the combination of storms being directed into the Midwest rather than north of the Midwest, and the added water vapor in the air from the warmer oceans, then you get more rainfall.
Mm-hmm. Since these weather patterns that bringing the moisture are coming more southerly, a southerly route, then up north, where, for example, is getting less of the precipitation?
Well, actually, the north isn't getting less precipitation. All I was saying is that we were in a time period when our drought frequency is relatively low.
Okay. Now tornadoes, are they kind of an outlier here? We've had fewer tornadoes. And if I say we're having more extreme weather, people would expect more tornadoes.
Yeah, that's always a very difficult way to how people perceive the words extreme and how scientists perceive the word extreme. Scientists definitely think of rare events, meaning extreme, as not necessarily being damaging events. And so it's true that not every type of damaging weather will increase in frequency or severity as climate changes, whether that's changes by greenhouse gases or whether it's by the natural variability of tens to hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we don't know about predictions of tornadoes going into the future.
Well, so far there isn't any evidence in any of the climate projections leading far out into the middle of the century or beyond that tornadoes will change in their frequency in the area. One type of severe weather that might change is hail and wind damage. And so these can form in storms that are not as organized as the storms that produce tornadoes. Tornadoes come out of storms that they describe on TV as supercells. You can still get a lot of hail and wind damage even without a supercell. And so with added humidity in the air, there is potential for there to be more hail and wind. And so over the next 10 years, just as we have more potential for flood, you might think that we have more potential for hail and wind damage.
Okay, so we should expect more rainfall in the spring, generally speaking, an increase in the number of days it will rain. What do you see as, in shorthand, that we need in terms of public policy and action to meet this challenge?
Well, mostly we have to deal with more water on the ground and factors that allow us to control the speed of that water moving across the ground, control the loss of resources caused by water moving the ground around and by flushing chemicals down into streams. Those are the investments that would benefit us the most over the next 10 to 20 years from my perspective. So where I would say we really need to focus is much more on allowing much more with how we manage our water.
Mm-hmm. And that'll be your message on Wednesday.
Yeah, for sure. That will be the main point of my messages.
Okay. Anything left out of your message you want to mention before we let you go?
No, I think at the moment that's about all I'd like to say, other than I want to point out that with the increase in rainfall, what happens is then you increase the likelihood of compound severe weather events or damaging weather events. And what that means is, you know, maybe a tornado and a flood occurred together by chance, but if you change the likelihood of one of those two things, then the chances of both coming together can go up. So that's the secondary point to bring out, is that not only do we need to focus on managing our water, but we need to think about what would be the new compound cost, or the cost of compound damaging events.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then that makes it harder to prepare for, doesn't it?
Well, I would guess
so. Or not necessarily, I guess.
I'm not the economist, but I'll just tell you how to compute the frequencies and the probabilities, and then we'll let other people deal with the cost of it.
Very good, Chris. We'll talk to an economist shortly. We appreciate you talking with us. Chris Anderson, Assistant Director of the Climate Science Program at Iowa State University. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about the economic impact, the impacts, likelihood of extreme weather events coming in the next few years, as we've seen in the last five or so years, variations. Wayne Johnson is with us. He's a corn and soybean farmer in north central Iowa, joining us by phone. Wayne, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Ben.
Hi. You've been listening here. We just want to tell people, I guess, you farm about 6,000 acres, corn, soybeans. Been in the business for a few decades, haven't you?
Yeah. I've had the chance to observe extreme weather.
Okay. So what have you experienced? What stands out for in your area for the extreme weather that's had the most impact on your business?
Yeah. In 1993, we had extreme floods all across Iowa. And in 2012, we had drought across the area. In 2013, we had wet. And those would stand out as the greatest extremes for me. I guess the point that I would make is that they're extremely unpredictable. We'd all like to have them be a little more predictable. Hurricanes in the Philippines, wouldn't it be nice to know 1 week ahead of time?
Mm.
In 1993, all winter long, the climatologists and the weather gurus, I won't name anybody, but we're predicting drought, and I'd never bought federal crop insurance. And so in 93, the probability is quite high for a drought, and I spent $80,000 on crop insurance that I'd never spent before. So you can imagine how diligent I was in determining if I needed crop insurance at all.
Right, right. Oh, that was $80,000. That was hard to laugh off that after the floods, wasn't it?
And so I bought it because of the drought prediction. And 6 weeks later, we had the worst droughts in 100 years.
Oh, my.
This year, we were following the drought of 2012, and we had no subsoil moisture down to about 15 feet, just absolutely bone dry, powder dry. And our subsoil moisture is usually within a couple of feet of the surface. And so there was, I spent quite a bit additional money on crop insurance, assuming that it was going to be a drought. And we made that decision March 15th. And the whole month of April, we weren't able to get into the field. I had five working days on my farm, the months of April, May, and June.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, Wayne, we just have to get in touch with you and figure out when you buy drought insurance to know when we'll have our next flood, huh?
That's you know, we do due diligence, and we call and we subscribe, and that unpredictability. Right. And we can reduce risk. There's no question I can reduce risk. What I would need to do is buy six planters, and so that I could plant it all on one day, but I would shift the profitability to John Deere or Case IH rather than to my own pocket.
So what are you carrying in terms of crop insurance now?
I carry 85% level, the maximum level that we can purchase. I bought it for a drought. I was sure that it was going to be dry this year.
And that protects you regardless of what destroys your crop, whether it's wind or drought or flood. That covers it all.
It covers most. And I'd have to go back on the policy, but yes, it does protect against drought and against wet. Wind events and fire events are more questionable.
Now, is it sometimes, as a homeowner, it is, we all know it's sometimes hard to know when to file a claim. Is that the same way for a farmer on 6,000 acres of soybeans and corn?
Yeah, a farmer never wants to have to file a claim. It's just like having a car accident. Do you ever come out ahead, you know, with your car insurance? You know, sometimes you can maybe be a little bit ahead, maybe $100 on a car accident, but you just as soon not have your car wrecked. You just as soon be able to drive it every day and not have to deal with the paperwork and addressing all the issues. And so that's true for a farmer as well on crop insurance. It's you don't come out smelling like a rose. It's an insurance claim, and the insurance companies are there to make money.
Right. Have you made any claims recently?
Yes, I had a real large claim in 2012, and I've already had prevented planting. Back in August, they settled on prevented planting, and I will have another claim here that I need to file in the next week or so here.
Mm-hmm. When you say really large, can you give us any idea?
I think so far this year I've on prevented planting, I think it was around $800,000 in indemnity. But I probably produced maybe 500,000 bushels less corn. So that 500,000 bushels of corn to sell, that would be $2.5 million.
Yep.
So I'd just as soon have the corn and sell the corn as have a $800,000 indemnity.
Yep, sure. I understand that. When in the second half of our program, we'll be talking more about insurance, specifically with Commissioner Gerhardt, and he'll be joining us. But to finish up this conversation, the insurance commissioner of the state of Iowa, Nick Gerhardt. But to finish up this conversation, Wayne Johnson, you've undoubtedly talked with other farmers in your areas, your area, and others. Are you representative, or is this what is concerning farmers now? How this will spin on into the future, what actions you need to be taking to lessen your risk?
Well, there's a pretty large discussion with the Farm Bill that they were going to eliminate. They would just as soon move the crop insurance. So the crop insurance is subsidized, and I only pay maybe 50 to 60% of what the government says actuarials would support. And so the government does subsidize that insurance premium that I pay. And the reality is, if I don't have insurance, I'm not able to take the risk much as none of us are able to take the risk on medical insurance. And so, you know, it's only prudent to buy medical insurance because we don't know what next week holds for our health.
In this area, though, we mentioned the Farm Bill. From your perspective as a farmer, are you keeping your eye on any specific aspect of those subsidies for crop insurance?
Very much so, and it's still pretty much in the air, I think, definitely. And for young farmers, you know, I've been here for a while, and so I can absorb a little bit. But for a young farmer, banks are requiring maybe 40% working margin, working capital margin, and what that means is 40% of risk exposure, or you know, you take your gross of what you produce per year, and 40% of that needs to be your cash in your checkbook. And it used to be maybe 15% of your gross dollars generated per year mm-hmm. needed to be working capital. And so that huge capital requirement, young farmers, it might take them 20 years to get to that point of being able to have 40% margin. And so just the credit worthiness for operating loans, and you have 1 year like this, it would just wipe out, obviously, my working capital, and so then I wouldn't be a good credit risk next year. And so I think it's a huge food security issue. I'm a well-established farmer, and I wouldn't farm next year if I didn't have crop insurance. I mean, I would just sell. And So
yeah, we have to go in just a second, but we talked with an expert in climate science just a few moments ago, Wayne, and I know neither you nor I are climatologists here, but based on your long experience there, do you get the sense that we're in a new era? Because who's more attached to the weather and changing patterns than a farmer like you who's been around doing it since 1980?
Very much so. You know, I watch it by the hour every day of my life.
Right.
Even as I sleep, I listen to the rain on the roof, and some days that's a good sound, and some days I, oh no, another rain. And so, yeah, it's something that I can't control, and so farmers are willing to take a risk, and I think that as a people, as a nation, we need to do something to help assume some of that risk, because it's totally something that none of us can control, and we all want to be environmentally smart and sensitive and contribute to the extent that we can. And I think, and I know every farmer that I know is doing that in terms of placement of fertilizers and amounts and herbicides and watching our water movement. And, okay, you know, yep, we're investing huge amounts to protect. We're the first ones to drink the water, and we're the first ones to, it's our children and grandchildren that are going to be here. So we're working real hard.
Wayne Johnson farms about 6,000 acres of corn and soybeans in north central Iowa. Wayne, thanks for giving us your perspective.
Sure. Thank you, Ben, for the opportunity.
Sure thing. Dave Swenson is with us. We're going to get a little bit of Dave here and then continue on with him after the break. He's an associate scientist in the Department of Economics in the College of Agriculture at Iowa State University. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Before we go to break, give us an idea, broad brushstrokes here, of the economic impact of the recent extreme weather that we've been talking about.
Well, if we go back to 2008 and the floods that we endured, mostly in eastern Iowa during that time, when they summed it all up, when we added up all of the public's costs, it was close to $3.5 billion. Now, the losses that were incurred were greater than that, but the cost to the public was hefty and substantial and highly concentrated in about a 6-county area.
We can Where was that area?
Well, it was, if you go up into the Mason City and then Charles City, down into Waterloo, Cedar Falls, down into Cedar Rapids, of course, and then University of Iowa, Iowa City, and Coralville.
List some things that these costs are attached to, the big ticket items.
Sure. Well, the majority of the costs are going to go to, well, let me just back up. I've got the numbers right here. Of about $3.5 million that were estimated losses in 2008, $1.3 billion were housing and business structures. About $660 million were infrastructure, large impact on educational facilities, almost $300 million worth of estimated losses early on then. Then we have common historical and cultural landmarks, parks, recreation, a wide variety of things like that, $285 million.
Okay, Dave Swenson, we have to take a break. Mm-hmm. We'll be back with Dave Swenson to look at the economic impact of our recent extreme weather. And when we come back, I want to ask Dave about the biggest losers here, also perhaps some winners, economic winners in terms of, I suppose, cleaning up after the damage. We'll find out. What are your questions about our extreme weather currents, current and future? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Still to come, plenty of guests. Frank County, mayor of Des Moines as well. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. How do you feel about roundabouts? You know, those intersection things that have been popping up around and replacing traffic lights. Strong feelings on that. Tomorrow on this program, we'll hear from one Iowa community that has incorporated new roundabouts. Quite controversial, as it turns out, aimed at easing traffic flow. We'll also hear from state lawmakers about what projects may be in store for the state and how those projects will be funded. So transportation on the docket tomorrow during this hour. We hope you'll join us. This hour, we're talking about these great swings we've been having, these weather extremes, floods, then drought, fluctuations that are expensive, negatively affecting Iowa's agriculture, business, people. Well, the economic impact of these weather extremes and how to make Iowa more resilient to any weather extremes in our future, the topic of a day-long symposium coming up on Wednesday at the Hy-Vee Hall in Des Moines. And if you'd like to find out more, you need to go to the University of Iowa Public Policy Center website. And this hour, we're hearing from a number of participants taking part in that symposium. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Dave Swenson is with us at the moment, associate scientist in the Department of Economics in the College of Agriculture at Iowa State University. When we left off before the break, Dave, you were telling us about some of the biggest losers here in terms of sectors, structures, and so forth. But give us a little better picture, and perhaps some people who did better with this extreme weather around here.
Well, really nobody does better, because there's the difference between the itemization of all of the losses and what the public is able to compensate households and the commercial sector as well as other governments. The gap between that is truly, truly a loss. But when you have a disaster, when you have an organized response to a disaster, you have the cleanup. And the cleanup involves the flow of federal money, some state money, and we get an economic impact, a localized construction primarily related economic impact, as well as a consumption related economic impact, because people have to turn around now and try to restore their households or try to restore their inventories or try to get their buildings or their public works back up online. And so you do get a beneficial offset, but we always have to point out that beneficial offset doesn't compensate the losers. It just, in the aggregate, what we get is a blip of economic activity that actually makes a disaster area look like it's doing better than it did before the disaster.
As an economist, tell us, does investing, and I'm guessing this is true, investing in prevention makes more economic sense than dealing with the costs at the back end of weather-related damage, doesn't it?
Yes, it would. But you have to know when and how to invest in that prevention. A lot of things, there's a lot of uncertainty. You don't know whether certain infrastructure has a certain amount of capacity. You don't know what might be the next high water mark or some other kind of disaster. And so what most government agencies will do, what most businesses do, they plan incrementally. Every time they have an opportunity to improve something, to change their roadway, change their bridge design, change their wastewater treatment facility, those types of things, they start to incorporate new knowledge and new civil engineering or new standards into their planning. The other thing, though, of course, that we have to pay attention to is land use planning, because having businesses and households in regions of peril makes no sense. And we have to learn how to utilize our land appropriately and make sure that we safeguard, again, both homes as well as commercial activity.
Do you sense in the state any resistance to putting in what prevention that makes sense, even if it's at some cost?
You're always going to get, you're going to get two types of resistance. One is, we've always done things this way, or we've always settled in this part of town, or we've always been able to exist here. They don't want to pick up. They don't want to move. They don't want to do things. And the other one, of course, is just simply cost. And we've been living in the public sector with a constrained governmental funding flow for a wide range of activities and an unwillingness to backfill and or otherwise try to make some of our public funding commitments what they were before we went into this recession. So there's a huge resistance to public cost that is preventive in nature.
Dave Swenson, you started off our conversation by telling us a little bit about the dollars and cents impact of the weather we've been having in the last 5 or so years. What can you say, if anything, about future economic impact?
Well, first of all, there's going to be economic impact from the different types of disasters that we've been enduring. They're unpredictable. We had, as the gentleman before us just talked about, we were preparing in the springtime for drought-related activities. We were preparing a study on drought-related disruptions in transportation and industrial activity. And then we got this incredibly wet spring, and it made us look a little bit silly. But, you know, a couple of months later, we were back in really dry times, and people were asking for our report. He mentioned the amount of uncertainty that we're dealing with, and that is the overriding factor that's driving the decision-making process. You know, in insurance terms and in economics terms, risk is something we can quantify and we can assign values to. But uncertainty you can't assign values to, and it makes it difficult to insure and it makes it difficult to plan. And we're in a period, I believe, with regard to policy development of heightened uncertainty, and that leads to an increased inability to plan appropriately.
Dave Swenson, thank you so much. Dave Swenson from the Department of Economics in the College of Agriculture at Iowa State University. Thanks, Dave. And we continue on with a look back at insurance again. Now, extreme weather events have cost the U.S. insurance industry some $32 billion. That was just in 2011. Nick Gerhardt is joining us, Insurance Commissioner of the State of Iowa. Welcome to our program, Commissioner Gerhardt.
Thanks for having me.
Your speech on Wednesday, I see, is titled Managing Risk and Surplus. Give us an idea of the points you want to make about managing risk.
Well, as you well know, insurance companies exist really to avoid risk. And when they can't avoid risk, it's to help mitigate risk and manage risk. And so really what I want to cover on Wednesday is what insurance companies are doing to manage their surplus. At the end of the day, any event, whether it's catastrophic or otherwise, you know, carriers use its surplus to pay for the event. They're obviously a reinsurance. I'm also going to talk about other strategies that are out there that consumers and even insurers are using to help mitigate and manage the risk. I think the point was very well said that it's very hard to price some of this risk into your products because the weather patterns are changing, events happen. So really what I want to cover is what a consumer should look for and what the industry is doing to manage their risk.
Has everybody in the insurance industry, do you think, accepted that we are in a new era of climate change? Or are there people resisting that idea that this is some kind of a one-off situation we've been having in the past few years?
I think you have opinions on both sides, quite frankly. The best research I've seen is a couple of states have done a survey. California's done probably the most comprehensive one. They did 400 surveys. I actually reviewed the surveys and responses. Out of those 400, 264 carriers indicated climate change posed a risk to their business. What I found interesting is that no company really indicated a change in policy rates. No carrier really had altered their portfolio, their investment strategy. So I think it's safe to say a majority think it's an issue and are looking at it. I think every carrier would tell you, though, that they're in the business of managing this risk every day. And so they think of weather and weather-related events every day, and that's how they survive, is by managing that risk.
As Insurance Commissioner of the State of Iowa, are you a believer in climate change, Nick Gerhardt?
You know, it's a good question. I think from my perspective, I've looked at the issue. I can't say I've looked at it close enough to have an opinion that it's—
Not saying it's man-made or even leaving that side of question, just if we're in a new era of climate change globally.
Globally, I think it's—I mean, I would tell you that the insurance companies have the bills to pay for, to prove that. The number for the last 3 years has actually averaged about $70 billion worldwide of insured losses. That's up pretty dramatically from 1980 to 89. So I think Allianz is a worldwide company with a very large worldwide footprint. They put out a study not too long ago stating that the increase has gone from about $15 billion insured losses in the 80s and early 90s to about $70 billion a year. The other thing your audience may find interesting is that about 90% of those losses were in Europe and the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you see this trend perhaps already that extreme weather and the predictions of more extreme weather are causing people to try to reduce risk through more insurance? Are you seeing that trend?
Absolutely. We're seeing carriers come in with partnering up with big data companies. We're seeing big data companies come in with these risk mitigation tools, these weather risk mitigation tools. And I think we're seeing carriers really take a proactive approach. Some carriers have engineers on staff, scientists on staff. They're partnering with those types of folks. They're creating very sophisticated models. We're seeing all of that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Nick Gerhardt.
Thank you.
Insurance Commissioner at the State of the State of Iowa. We appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you very much.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about the fluctuations, the weather extremes we've been having the last few years, and then talking about the economic impact, also how we can make ourselves more resilient here in the Midwest, in Iowa. The topic of the symposium on Wednesday at Hy-Vee Hall in Des Moines. We're talking with some of their participants in that. Larry Weber will also be participating in that symposium. He's the director of the IIHR Hydro Science and Engineering. It's a research institute in Iowa City. He's also co-founder of the Iowa Flood Center. Larry Weber, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Ben. Thank you.
And And also joining us in the final 10 minutes of the program, Frank County is with us, Mayor of Des Moines. Mayor County, welcome.
Welcome, and thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Let me start off with you, Larry Weber, your message for the symposium in a nutshell.
Well, we need to think about balance in Iowa as we move forward. We've experienced over the past 5 years interannual variability from drought to flood, as our earlier presenters had described in your show today. We used to think about floods or droughts maybe on a 10-year or 100-year cycle, and now we're seeing them in the same season. One of the messages that I've been trying to share is that we have this very complex hydrologic cycle, and as our rain falls and comes onto our land and comes off of our lands, how that water transports through the system, including evapotranspiration that happens here locally, also has a big impact in terms of our local weather. Mm-hmm. And so as we've continued to drain wetlands and install agricultural drainage that has been important for increased egg production, we're changing the hydrologic cycle at the same time.
So while you're on the topic of agricultural practices, are there practices that exacerbate when we have floods that we shouldn't be doing, that actually perhaps in the name of intense farming to get the most out of our land we're doing, that really doesn't work very well when we have extreme weather?
Well, I think so, because, you know, we're farming, you know, closer to the edge of the road, and we're farming closer to the edge of streams as our commodity prices have gone up, and it's encouraged farmers farm our land more extensively. Those lands used to be very important in terms of allowing water to absorb and infiltrate into our soils and into our shallow and deep groundwater. We've changed those practices. We're ensuring those activities. And in some cases, you know, we're taking that risk, at least in part, out of the producer and making that more of a societally borne risk.
Frank County, Mayor of Des Moines, how has extreme weather affected the Des Moines area recently? For our statewide audience, just remind us what's hit you particularly hard in the last few years.
Well, we've certainly seen a variety of weather, but I would say let's just start in 2008 and 10. We saw certainly an extreme weather situation and flooding and breach of a levee here in Des Moines. Which has subsequently been rebuilt, by the way, up in the Birdland area. And then, of course, in 2010, we had three events. First one essentially in the March time frame, and then in the June time frame, and then in the August time frame that actually hung on almost till September. So
what was the nature of those days?
Well, we had properties all around Des Moines that were flooded. And some of them were in some of the smaller tributaries coming into the Des Moines River, Four Mile Creek and Walnut Creek, for instance. And we saw millions of dollars worth of damage and numerous buyouts that we went through. Unfortunately, it took quite a while to get some of the things resolved as a result of some of the processes at the federal level that take place, if FEMA is going to reimburse or do some other things or any of the other sources of funds. We saw victims that got damaged in the 2008 floods, and quite frankly, they didn't get their issues resolved till after the 2010 floods. So it was in terms of buyouts and doing things like that. So we saw lots of only one life was lost in our area, but nevertheless, we saw tens of millions of dollars worth of personal property damage and a number of buyouts that the city has participated in as a result of those events.
And is that a many-fold increase over the damages that one would have seen in previous generations?
Well, I think the thing that we note is they're much more frequent. You know, when we talk about 100-year and 500-year events, when you have three near 500-year events in 1 year, you're beginning to question, you know, exactly what that term means. And then certainly four of them in 3 years, or, 2008 and 2010, actually, 2 years, I guess, as we think about what's happening. And then this year we see, in our area, starting in January through about the middle of June, the wettest period on record in the 140-year history. Not that it caused floods, but it much more rainfall and dampness in our area, and followed immediately in the late June, July, August time frame with only about an inch of rainfall in our area. So we had a drought situation. So in the same year, we saw nearly two unprecedented events on both ends. So the extreme weather situations are presenting themselves to us on a much more regular basis.
Mayor Cowney and Larry Weber, I want to ask you as we close this hour to talk about the type of investments that Mayor Cowney in Des Moines. Larry Weber, let me start off with you. What investments are we making or need to be making to become more resilient in the state?
Yeah, one of the things that we're studying right now is a project, the Iowa Watershed Project, where we're looking at putting distributed storages on private lands, working very closely with producers that have an interest in putting farm ponds, wetlands, and reestablishing floodplain connectivity on their lands, and mathematically modeling and with field assessment determining the value in terms of flood damage reduction. We're doing this in three small watersheds in Iowa and going to use that as a roadmap for all of Iowa as we move forward to watershed improvement and flood damage reduction for our state.
What about on the prediction side? I know you're working on that too, so that we can better see what areas flood when we do get inundated with water.
Right, absolutely. And part of our predictions are really timely and helpful for folks as events are unfolding, as well as for long-term planning. We have sophisticated mathematical models that can predict water flow at about a million locations in Iowa, as well as detailed maps that we've made available to our largest urban areas that show the extent of flooding for various river discharges.
Mayor Cowney, how have you been proactive in the Des Moines area in dealing with future extreme weather events?
Well, certainly we've been looking at our whole levee system, and we have worked with the Corps of Engineers who controls those to make sure that we have them at the right heights, although there are frequency flow studies that we've seen preliminary numbers that we probably ought to reevaluate exactly what we ought to be doing. But we have a plan that we continue to work on that essentially looks at four pieces. How do we prepare for a natural disaster situation? How do we prepare and train our people to respond to that? And then how do we what are our strategies to mitigate the effects of that event? And then how do we recover? And certainly the city's made significant events in a lot of areas in terms of the preparedness and in the levees and studying those and the flow of the Des Moines River and working with the Corps of Engineers closely on that. Interestingly enough, I also served on the National Preparedness Task Force as the elected official on that, probably as a result of some of our flood experiences in 08 and 10. But it with 27 federal agencies sitting around the table talking about these issues, it's interesting to see that everybody seems to realize that we're seeing more frequent events and that we need to have a strategy to look not only in Des Moines, Iowa, but nationwide to work on these things. So hopefully Congress and the legislature and all the city governments will work together through vertical preparations between government levels and then sort of at a multilateral as we share ideas city to city, everything from what people can do in their yards with rain gardens and bioswales and how we green our infrastructure to try to get the moisture back in the ground and deal with the rain more is we heard just a minute ago where it falls as opposed to sticking it in a hard pipe and run it down the river as quickly as possible, because that certainly increases the velocity of all those streams and rivers across Iowa. And we're hoping that those above us follow the golden rule. Don't do to those below you what you don't want those above you to do. So we're looking at all the strategies to try to deal with water and, in this case, flood situations.
Frank Cowney, Mayor of Des Moines, thank you for coming into our studio, joining us today.
Thank you.
And Larry Weber, we have about 30 seconds left. Is there something you wanted to get in that that you haven't already a point?
Well, we really hope that folks come out to our meeting on Wednesday.
Okay.
I think there's a wonderful list of presenters there, and we think the discussion will be lively and looking toward the future of Iowa.
Okay. The economic impact of weather extremes and how to make Iowa more resilient to weather extremes, the topic of a day-long symposium this coming Wednesday at the Hy-Vee Hall in Des Moines. Leading state policymakers, scientists, some of them you've heard on this hour, will be taking part. To find out more, you can go to the website ppc.uiowa.edu or just find the University of Iowa Public Policy Center website. And thank you for joining us, Larry Weber. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, Ben.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Jason Burns and John Pemble today. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk about transportation, new trends in the state in terms of transportation, and those roundabouts. Do you love them? Do you hate them? You can weigh in tomorrow. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.